Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett's the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own film critic. He joins us weekly, the films Juliet Naked and We the Animals. And I'm sorry, but good taste prevents me from making a movie out of these titles. Hi, David.
Hi, Jill. How are you doing this week?
I'm all right.
I'm glad to hear it. Yeah, what these movies have in common is slightly unconventional punctuation. Because Juliet Naked has a comma, Juliet, comma, naked, whereas We the Animals has no punctuation at all. So there's some fascinating...
There's some minutia for you.
Yeah. Anyway, I was kind of struck by that. But anyway, these are two good movies. I like them a lot. So I'll give a little spoiler on this particular report this week. I do like these movies, especially the one that I'll get to second, which is We the Animals. But I also rather liked Juliet Naked. And it's possible that one reason for this is that it's sort of, in a way, about a critic. And for a critic, there is simply nothing more fascinating than a story about a critic. But he's not exactly a critic. He's a critic who has sort of slid over into the territory of being a fan of that which he studies. In other words, he's really more of a scholar than a critic, and he studies one particular subject more than any other. He, interestingly, is a college professor. He teaches film and literature and television studies, stuff like that. But the real passion of his life is a rock and roll singer-songwriter named Tucker Crow, who vanished from the scene some years ago, and we hear all about this in the beginning of the movie. Of course, he's a totally fictional character, but we start off seeing our two main characters, aside from Tucker Crow. We have a guy named Duncan, who is played by the wonderful Chris O'Dowd, and his girlfriend Annie, who is played by the wonderful Rose Byrne, and they live together in this seaside community in England. And he goes off and teaches his courses, and she works for a museum, a naturalist museum, a museum of nature, which is preparing for a big exhibition on the summer of 64. Interesting, because I never thought of 1964 as being a particularly distinguished year for anything, but that's what her museum is preparing for, and that's what she's working on. She's having little conflicts with the guy who runs the museum. So that's basically the setup of the movie at the beginning. We have her, and she's working on her museum exhibition along with various other people at the museum, and we have her boyfriend, who is teaching his courses but thinking all the time about Tucker Crow. Now, we find out at the beginning that Tucker Crow was this very well-known rock and roll musician, not a big star or anything, but he was very well-known. And one day, his girlfriend broke up with him, and he just completely lost it. He was in the middle of doing a gig at a club, and he just left. He went into the bathroom and then of the club, and then he just left and vanished and disappeared. And now it has been 25 years or something like that since he disappeared, and nobody much remembers him, much less thinks about him all the time, except for one of our main characters, Duncan, who has transformed a room of his house into a sort of a museum of memorabilia of Tucker Crow, and spends all of his time. He does like sort of YouTube type little communications, and he runs a website for Tucker Crow, and the few Tucker Crow fans out there are always chatting with each other on this website. So what happens is that something arrives in the mail one day, and it happens when Duncan is not even home, and it turns out to be a CD of the original demo version of Tucker Crow's greatest album. Tucker Crow's greatest album was called Juliet. It was about his girlfriend, the one who left him and led to the end of his career. And this demo, which is without all of the production frills that you get when you do a finished product of a recording, is what the title refers to. It is the Juliet Naked. It is the Juliet album. in its original demo form, its naked form, without all of the fancy touches and the excellent audio and all of that. So this is a huge event in Duncan's life when he gets to hear this, and it's really fantastic. And he thinks it's brilliant, and it's yet another example of Tucker Crowe's magnificent talent. On the other hand, his girlfriend, who also listens to it, she doesn't think it's much good. And she posts something on the website, on Duncan's website, saying that it's not much good. Among the other verbs, or excuse me, adjectives that she uses, flaccid is one of the things. She just thinks it's pretty dull. So here we have a conflict now between these two who are not exactly getting along totally smoothly. Anyway, Duncan is very upset that Annie has posted this negative review of this wonderful artifact which has suddenly surfaced from the magnificent Tucker Crowe. But then what comes along but Annie gets a message from Tucker Crowe saying, "You're right, it's not much good." And it turns out that Tucker Crowe is out there. He's alive and well. He just hasn't had anything to do with music for the past 20 or 25 years. But he lived, and now he becomes a major character of the movie, and he is played by Ethan Hawke. And he lives in a garage attached to his ex-wife's, or behind his ex-wife's house. And he has all kinds of children, and at one point, fairly early in the film, he has a heart attack, a mild one, and he ends up in the hospital. And we then have a scene where Annie comes to visit him, and she's just meeting him for the first time around this period. She has flown to America to meet him. And never mind. Between the two of them, they go back and forth between America and England a little bit. But his children are all showing up. This is in a British hospital. And all of these young adults, plus he has a little boy. So then eventually it becomes a kind of a three-way relationship between Annie and her boyfriend Duncan, and the two of them break up for a totally unrelated reason, and then Tucker Crowe is now in the picture, and we're of course wondering if Annie and Tucker Crowe are going to become lovers and so forth. So all of this is a very amiable movie. I thought it was going to be a real rock and roll movie when I went in to see it, and since I just last year put out a book plug coming up, folks, called Rock and Roll Movies, published by Rutgers University Press, which is my little disquisition on the history of rock and roll movies, but mainly covering the 50s and 60s and into the 70s, I thought this was going to be a rock and roll movie too, maybe, you know, something if there's ever another edition of my book, but it really isn't. There's not really very much music in it. Tucker does a little bit of performing near the very, very end of the film. Mainly, it's just a very nice acting movie. Rose Byrne, as I already said, is just wonderful. I always like seeing Chris O'Dowd, and they are very good as the couple who just don't quite get along. And Ethan Hawke, who is a good actor along with being a superstar, does a very, very nice, amiable job of playing Tucker Crowe. He's put on a few pounds, and he's not all that wonderful looking. And in fact, when they first get together, Duncan, who has been worshiping at the shrine of Tucker Crowe for decades, doesn't recognize him and refuses to believe that it is Tucker Crowe. So, and that's because Ethan Hawke is playing with such an artful blend of the extremely ordinary and the very, very ordinary. So anyway, it's a very nice movie. Eventually, we even get to that exhibition about 1964 at the museum, and that's sort of the climax of the film when various different aspects come together. So Juliet Naked, a very nice, low-key movie. I really do recommend it. It's a nice film to see, and sort of as the summer starts to give way to the fall here, it has that kind of atmosphere to it. I was even more impressed by We the Animals, which I think is one of the absolute best movies of the year. This film was directed by a guy named Jeremiah Zagar, who has done up until now a lot of television and some short films and so forth. And this is his first regular feature film, fiction narrative film. And he has just made an astonishingly good movie. It's just so, so good. I want to compare it just a tiny little bit here with the movie we talked about recently, Madeline's Madeline, which is a very sort of unconventionally structured impressionistic account of a very young woman who is sort of mentally unbalanced and who is kind of slipping in and out of reality. And the movie wants to be a very sort of experimental approach to telling the story, conveying the mood of what it is like to be in her sort of slippery mind at the same time as it's telling a story about her. And I don't think it quite works. It's an interesting experiment, and I'm glad it got into movie theaters and all of that, but I don't think it quite works. We the Animals is another very sort of impressionistic kind of a movie, and it also slips back and forth between giving the sort of what it's like to be one of the main characters, a young boy named Jonah, what it's like to be him, and then also telling the story of him. But this is really not a movie with a very strong storyline. It's not meant to have that. It's basically a series of incidents, and we, again, are sort of slipping in and out of this very, very impressionistic idea of what it's like to be this boy Jonah, or maybe one of his two young brothers, and then telling a story about them, which isn't so much a story, again, as sort of a series of impressionistic incidents. So the movie takes place out in the sticks. It's in the boondocks. It's apparently meant to be upstate New York. And we have this mixed-race family. The father is Puerto Rican. The mother is Anglo. And we have these three little boys. And the parents don't get along very well. And we have a real sort of dysfunctional family situation here. The father occasionally really beats up the mother, and the parents break up, and then they get back together again, and we have all that dynamic going on, and that's a very important thread in the movie, but it's not the main concern of the movie, which is the young boys. I will say that the relationship between the parents is not 1,000% dysfunctional, and on some level, they obviously really do get along and like each other, and maybe even love each other. Maybe that's why they don't break up, but we also have a whole lot of pretty horrifying abuse going on, and it's always unclear whether these two are going to be able to hold on to jobs and, you know, keep the family, and, you know, they're rather nice house, which they have, but the main concern of the movie is these three young boys. They are little boys, and they are coping with all of this stuff and getting along with each other, there's not much money here. This is basically a family which is not in poverty, but close to poverty. Sometimes there really is nothing to eat, and the little boys have to go sneak out and find some neighboring farmer or somebody with a good garden and steal some food out of that. And there's a couple of surprising little scenes that take place when they're doing that sort of thing. So that's really what this movie is about. It's about these three young boys. And again, the main one is a boy named Jonah, but the other two are really just as important as he is. In a way, they're sort of one composite character, but they each have distinct personalities, and we see how they cope with all of this. And we are reminded of the fact, which I really think is a fact, that for very young kids who have never really known any other sort of life, even though there are horrible things and there are times when there is literally nothing to eat and they are very, very hungry and their parents aren't around and what are they going to do, they're coping with this and they're drawing strength from each other, and they're having what they regard as little adventures. And so their lives are not horrible. They are horrible if you look from the outside, abusive parents, a lot of poverty, all of that. But from their point of view, also it's full of adventures, it's full of camaraderie, things that they don't even have words for. But it's very much about that. And again, the movie conveys the feelings of all this even more than it conveys the facts of all this. One of the threads that comes into the movie is they kind of get to know somebody else. They get to know a guy who has sort of a little farm nearby and who gives them some food at one point. And he has a grandson who lives with him, and this grandson becomes a kind of a friend. And there's a little bit of visiting with him, and his big dream is somehow to get off to Philadelphia someday when he can get enough money together. Here we have a part of the movie which may make some people uncomfortable, because this young grandson, who is a lot older than our three main characters, he's a teenager, appears to be a very large amount of his time sitting in front of his TV and watching hardcore pornography. And little boys do this with him. So we have this sort of uncomfortable making scene where we have these three preteens sitting around and gazing with this teenager at this hardcore porn. They've never seen anything quite like this before. I gotta emphasize that when things like this are filmed, the kids who are being filmed in the movie, these little boys, they're not actually looking at pornography, and they will probably be a few years older before anybody lets them see the whole movie that they starred in. But this is a very interesting thread, and it shows that the that the director, Jeremiah Zagar, doesn't mind dealing with some pretty itchy situations, sensitive situations, uncomfortable situations. And he makes it real, and he makes it so that you can actually watch this stuff while getting across at the same time the idea that these young boys that this movie is about are very, very vulnerable in all kinds of ways, some of which come directly from their family situation, some of which come from outside. The movie doesn't have a very resounding ending, but the whole thing I just found completely absorbing. It's one of the most creative movies I've seen in a long time, just in terms of cinematic style, and I really think it's one of the very best. So of the two films today, Juliet Naked, a very nice, amiable, low-key movie that I had a good time watching, but We the Animals, which is really sort of exciting to watch, and I could not recommend it more highly. So that is my enthusiastic story this week, Jill.
Thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Juliet Naked and We the Animals.